podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Definitely not Forever Young. It's definitely not.
No, it's not Forever Young. Don't be fucking copyrighting us, fuck's sake. That's the third different intro I've had to do in 3 weeks with this fucking show.
And you found one that's as close to Forever Young as that's not Forever Young that you could. Like, yeah. As that started off, I was just thinking of Vo Pedro.
Yeah, well, look, that's the intro, right? We can't get copyright strike on it because it's absolutely royalty free. Sorry, we've started the show all over the place as usual. This is Winners and Losers from the LFC Day Trippers. I'm Gav. Dicko's with me. Phil is with me. Pete can't be with us because he's on holiday in Blanche. He can't be with us tonight. Fair play to him. Andy in the chat says it's an absolute banger. There you go. Kieran B wants to know, do we need to take mushrooms for that intro? We don't come down that sort of fucking carry on. Get Phil to sing an intro. He is. He's tried his best to get his copyright strike there, in fairness to him. Anyway, winners and losers. There's no time limits this week because we have two teams we want to talk about, and they kind of tie in with each other. But if there's anything else you want us to talk about, whether it's good or bad in the world of football this week, throw it in the chat. I will save them for later, and when we get through air stuff, we will bring them up, if that's okay. Dicko, how are you?
I'm okay, yeah. I know there's a bit of confusion about my participation, but I am here. I am well.
Yeah. Well, we asked, did you want to come on tonight? You went, I'm out for the next 2 weeks. And then you just showed up at 2 minutes of 10 going, no, I meant the 2 weeks after this week. Yeah, you know, exactly. So that's how your calendar works, which is sound. We know that from now on. Phil, you've had a haircut. How are you?
I have. I had a haircut the week before last because it was the baby's christening. That's why I wasn't around last Monday because I was absolutely in a bundle. Yeah. It was like the first time I'd taken a day off, proper day off. The kids, he'd gone to creche and herself had gone to somewhere. I think I actually sent her to Wexford for a week. And the two of us just chilled out and I was brought breakfast in bed and everything on the Monday. It was phenomenal. It was
unbelievable work.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so the idea of doing a podcast at that stage, not a hope. I still have, I haven't drank since then, so I still have beers and stuff in the fridge. So, Ray, if you want to come over, you're more than welcome. I can go to
Okay. Avo the Tour says, you're we're in welcome. Showbiz, baby. Next topic.
We're in showbiz, baby.
There you go. Baby. You have to play every show. It's the law. But look, we're going to talk about a couple of things. If you want us to talk about anything else, throw it in the chat. And as I said, I will save it. And we go from there. I have a few bits to talk about. I'll get them later. Phil, what do you want to talk about, Phil?
Many things, Gavin. I've had a wonderful time. I'd like to talk about life in general. Maybe just we could share parenting tips that could be good. Given there's nothing going on in the football world, so the only thing that really popped up was the announcement by UEFA of its new version of financial fair play, invented by the Qataris who own PSG.
Can we caveat this with you've read up on this and this isn't just you've thought something up in your head at lunchtime?
No, this is in place. Okay. Some random person with a random name announced it for UEFA today. So when you get a random name, it's generally an important announcement, unless it's Seferin, who's just coming out and just doing a cover-up or whatever it is that's going on. So this one is a big announcement. They announce the new things. I've only half read the press conference and then read Swiss Rambles thread on it that's on Twitter. So anyone should go on if you want to see, as ever. The guy spends all his time doing analysis, and his analysis is brilliant in terms of breaking these things into bite-sized chunks that people can understand. And then there were some major takeaways that came out of it, because, you know, it obviously failed. UEFA failed in trying to prove that Manchester City broke financial fair play. So it was interesting to see what the financial fair play version 2 is. And this, they've gone out of their way to say that this isn't financial fair play. This is about stability. Was it stability? So there's three things that they're focusing on, and it's about financial regulation, essentially. It's to ensure the stability and the longevity of the game and the clubs that are involved in the game. And if there's one biggest takeaway, is that there's now...
to me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I know, but if there's one biggest takeaway, is there is one simple rule that more or less defines this completely, and is that you can only spend 70% of the revenue you generate, right? And they've made it simple, because
spend
even now,
or spend on wages?
No, spend. There's no salary cap. They got rid of the salary caps.
Okay, right? So if you earn 1 billion, you must show at the end of the season that you have 300 million left in your account.
Yeah. You have to make 300 million in time. There has to be 300 million in profit left. So 30%, 70% can go on
whatever.
Spending, right? But it also takes into account managers, it takes in the male players, because it's UEFA, so they definitely haven't thought about this long and hard, right? It takes in male players' wages and that of the coaches, right?
Okay.
So that's what can be spent on. Then the 30% is ancillary to what it is, but you have to show that bill is only 70% of your total revenue, right?
Okay.
The German clubs and the Spanish clubs.
Includes agents' fees as well, which is quite
agents' fees. Yeah.
That's when you get
into the deeper sort of what makes up the spend, what makes up the
but
revenue
the overall
side
thing
of it,
is that for every 100 million you earn, you can spend 70 million whatever you like, but at the end of the year, you must have if you earn 100 million, you can spend 70. Yep. At the end of that calendar year, you must show that you've earned 100 and you've 30 left.
Yeah.
So what happens if a team does that for 5 years and you have 150 million sitting there? Are you allowed to put that back in?
That comes back into their working cash. But like, if you look at the very rarely is that, do you have 30 million cash sitting there, Gav? It's tied up because players are amortized over 36 months in terms of their contracts. They're done over 3 years, right? So there's lots of accounting techniques, which is paper money and isn't real money, like cash in your bank. In reality, even if you're generating a profit, the money's going somewhere. It's generating something. Like, you're not letting
clarify then, if you earn 100, you spend 70, you've 30 left. The next year, if you earn another 100, it's the 70% is based off 130 million. Is that right? Which then
you must have
39 at the back end of it.
Yeah, but of course your revenues are growing, so you should be able to. Your 70% is a constant in terms of what's there. So it's look, to me, it's if you didn't have what was going on, because part of the rules also allows you to bring in fair value for sponsorship deals, and fair value is just making up stuff. That's the way. Now let's get into the real business. The winners in this are the Qataris, are the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, are the Etihad lads in Manchester City who are using it as a thing, because fair value means that you can say that this sponsorship deal that I have with that isn't associated to me whatsoever with this random hotel that isn't built yet in the middle of Abu Dhabi, that's funded by the same fund that happens to own us but has definitely nothing to do with us and has now given us 400 million. That 400 million becomes part of your revenue. And if you can show that's fair value, then it's game on. So if you look at the revenue model that the Swiss Ramble posted on the teams, it puts Manchester City head and shoulders above all the English clubs. Their commercial revenue that will be counted is roughly around 700 million quid.
Mm-hmm.
right? 272 million of that, the largest element of it, is bigger than both Manchester United and both Liverpool's commercial income stream, which is ridiculous, right? Because when you look at their matchday revenue for the whole year, it's 1 million as opposed to 4 million for Liverpool and 8 million for Manchester United. Then you look at their broadcasting, we had more money from broadcasting than they did. But because they have these commercial deals, that brings their overall turnover up and means that their cost associated to the players then falls below a threshold. So that threshold can only be 70%. I'll dig out what it is, right? So it says, it's the introduction of squad, it's a squad cost control ratio of player wages, transfers and agents fees being limited to 70% of revenue and profit on player sales, mm-hmm. right? So if you can maximise, going back to your 100 million, right? So if you make 100 million this year, you can spend 70 million on players. Player revenues, transfers, agents, and all that type of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. If you carry your 30 million over to next year, that becomes part of the revenue that's there. So if you have 130 million, you can now spend 70% of 30 of, you can spend 70% of 130 million as opposed to 70% of 100 million, mm-hmm. right? So that means that what you can spend the following season rolls on. If you mm-hmm. keep carrying over that money, essentially that's what's going to go on. Now, as I said, the 30 million is unlikely to happen, but.
But the key in this, regardless of rolling on, it's the key in this, not what you land on in 2025. Because if you have a club that earns 500 million, right, a year, and all of a sudden they rock up in 2025 and go, oh, no, by the way, we earn 1 billion a year. And they go, well, how? Oh, well, here's all the deals we've done. So we can now spend 700 million a year on our club. We have 300 million left there, right? And then the following season, they can then spend 70% of 1.2 billion or 1.3 billion.
I hear what you're saying, but the observation period starts from 23-24,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that means that it's 90% in 23-24, 80% in 24-25, and then 70% from 25-26 onwards, right?
Yeah.
But you have to show, it's your revenues gap, so you have to show how your revenue is being generated. Mm-hmm. So you know when you were saying that billion, theoretically, but you'd have to be able to show that the commercial deals that you put in place as a team that's not in the Champions League are genuine and of fair value. Now, the fair value is the loosest part, so it's how they apply the fair value structure to it.
Yeah. So they just have to justify it.
Exactly. If they can do that, then it's...
Well, it's very easy to justify. We have someone that wants to pay us his money, and we talk mm-hmm. it. That's it. It doesn't matter if it's fair or not. You know, it's like you having a car, and you know it's worth 10 grand, and the fella knocks on your door and says, I'll give you 20 grand. There's nothing unfair around that. It's only on the person giving mm-hmm. you the money, but if they're willing to actually give you the money, so the fair value doesn't really come into it.
But this is where Newcastle are obviously going to manoeuvre themselves, you know, over the next few years into sort of replicating essentially what City have already started doing with all these commercial deals. I mean, Newcastle have basically, they've got their kit sponsor this season, this fun 8-8 sort of gambling crowds, but they've actually extricated themselves out of that deal early, which I think is fairly unprecedented. So they probably kind of come to some kind of agreement, which, you know, normally would be unheard of. But they're obviously doing that so that they can position a much more lucrative, probably Saudi-based or backed outfit that, again, will probably come in, weigh in with these heavily inflated numbers that will absolutely help them on the way to meet the financial fair play. You know,
they've already signed a deal, haven't they, today, with a short sleeve sponsor.
Yeah, Neon. Neon, the short sleeve sponsor.
No, I don't know who they are.
There are some crowd who focus on investing Saudi Arabian public investment funds across the world. So basically, the fund that owns the club sponsoring the short on the club so that they can sponsor people to spend money from the same investment fund that owns Newcastle. So it's crazy. But you know what's really interesting? If you were to bring those cost control measures in today, right, PSG, who obviously we were talking about the Qataris at the start, they would have a cost control ratio of over 102%. They wouldn't even meet the 90% threshold for next season, Gav. Mm-hmm.
So basically what you're saying is if they earn 100 million, they're spending 102 million, right? I'm surprised that number is that low.
Yeah, I am as well.
Like, I'm genuinely surprised that number is that low. And I'll tell you why. Because all this Chelsea stuff shone a massive light on this for me. Roman Abramovich, listen, the war, you know, he stuff frozen, wherever it might be, right? But at the end of the day, Chelsea Football Club were only in the position they were in because of a £1.6 billion loan from their owner. So no matter how good they operated, no matter what they won on TV and everything else, they were sitting before they were bought last week or the week before, whenever it was, right? Or they've kind of come in the last week or two, haven't they? They were sitting on £1.6 billion. Now, I understand it's from the owner. But if you'd done that anywhere else, you know, if Liverpool turned around tomorrow and said, we're going to sign these 10 players over the next 10 years, we've earmarked them all, Bellingham, whoever it might be, right? But in 10 years' time, we're going to be £1.6 billion in the hole. It's going to take us £1.6 billion to do this. They wouldn't have a chance in hell of fucking doing it. And I think that's what shone the biggest light for me. When you turn around and you go, listen, Chelsea have won 2 European Cups in the last 10 years. They've probably won 3 league titles in the last 10 years. They've won FA Cups, they've won League Cups, they've won loads of stuff. But at the end of the day, that man was giving them 80 million a year just to stay afloat. 80 million a year just to stay afloat. And I can't understand how that goes down. And that's what's shown the biggest light. Dicko, like, look, I'll get on to it in a minute about how you feel about certain clubs and different things. But the way I feel about it, Dicko, is that they've put out this and tried to word it in a certain way where you go, look, we're trying to look after football and COVID after COVID. We have to get back on the bike and make things right. But I just see this as giving certain clubs time to position themselves over the next 2 years and then definitely over the next 3 years to be in a position where they turn up and they go, we don't give a fuck if you say 70%. Because if you're only letting us spend 500 million this year, we will make sure that we have 1.4 billion in 3 years' time, and we can, and in turn, we can spend a billion a year. You know the sort of way?
Yeah. I mean, it's a framework that gives, as you say, these clubs who want to kind of work in a certain way, plenty of time, plenty of heads up to get all of these ducks in a row. I mean, the Newcastle is the classic example there of them removing themselves from a sponsorship deal, which would have inhibited them in terms of the number that they could have reported in, you know, 2, 3, 4 years' time. I don't know exactly how long was left on that deal, but they were a long-standing partner of theirs. They already extended the deal once. They were clearly happy with what they were getting from them till the point where they were taken over by a state, essentially. Look, I mean, it's infuriating as a Liverpool fan when you're not in that kind of category. How would we feel if we were kind of on the other side of the argument, maybe a little bit differently? And you know, when you see City fans and now Newcastle fans on the likes of Twitter absolutely trying to kind of back and justify, you know, what they're doing as a club, you know, and sort of disguise the fact what's actually happening just because they're happy enough to be chasing, you know, trophies that, you know, they want to be qualifying for Champions League and all this sort of stuff. And unfortunately for us, we've just got to, I guess, suck it up because this whole, you know, City being under investigation for years by the Premier League, you know, we see sort of Everton's finances, you know, all over the shop, but ultimately nothing happens to these clubs. Very worst they get is a little slap on the wrist. The lawyers will always come through if it starts to get really hairy, as we've seen with City's case in the past, where they managed to dodge the bullet. And unfortunately, it's kind of all going in that direction. And I'm certainly not one of those supporters, but, you know, whether I want FSG for the next 5 years or 10 years, I certainly don't want FSG to be replaced with, you know, the equivalent of a Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia kind of scenario. You know, I would much prefer it to be, a business model similar to what we've got today, albeit maybe with a little bit more clout behind it financially. But look, we just got to live with it. I don't lose any sleep over it because I think we're on the right side of the argument, and actually what we're doing in terms of competing with the likes of City and even the likes of, you know, outperforming the likes of PSG on the European stage, that gives me a greater sense of satisfaction than it ever would, winning trophies backed by all of these fake deals.
Mm. Owen Bourke says Kieran Maguire went through their books, and he says Newcastle could easily spend 500 million in this window and still be within FFP rules. Of course they could, because they're not in Europe. And the FFP only kicks in Europe, and it takes them 3 years to actually assess them. So,
yeah.
You know, they'd be 3 years in Europe and they go, you spent 500 million in 2022. Yeah, but we're making loads now. But it writes itself off.
And there's also lots of other things. It's like, just because you breach it doesn't mean that you can't enter competition. Now, there's even in this, right, there's a table form of what the punishments are. And they start with fines and work their way up to potential exclusion from the competitions or relegation from one competition to the next competition. And you know UEFA aren't going to kick you out of competition. They'll find the people. And that's what it looks like. Or they might prevent you from signing players for a transfer window or two transfer windows like they did with Chelsea. They're not going to kick the club out of the competition despite us thinking that that might happen. And even with the way this is written, it's like going back to what you're talking about earlier, Gav, like now where there's less control now on what the owners can do compared to what they did before. So Abramovich did all that put all that money in and converted it to equity, and it was a non-repayable loan and all that type of stuff. But under the new regulations, over a 3-year assessment period, where before with the FFP, you could only have a maximum loss of 30 million over those 3 years, right? Under this, it's potentially 90 million. Mm. That's acceptable. So you could have losses that total 90 million, almost 100 million for the previous 3 years.
But when this comes in, you're not allowed to have a loss, no?
No, you are. It's called an acceptable loss. So basically the way you get around the loss part.
But you just said that if you earn 100, you're allowed to spend 70. So
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that,
basically one part of it is the what you can spend on players and what you can spend on coaches and what you can spend on transfer fees, right? Mm-hmm. The other part is how you're running as a business. So mm-hmm. there's three tenets. There's cost control, stability, and sustainability, right? You could still be loss-making. The business side of it could still be loss-making because mm-hmm. of OPEX costs and all that type of
but
stuff.
But you're within the financial fair play as in what
because your what cost control, because your wages...
spending on
yeah. Exactly. Your wages and stuff are only 70% of the total revenue that's coming in, right? And the rest, say it's the rest of it's less or whatever is going on, right? But in this instance, now before the owner could convert, say it was 30 million, right? The owner could convert 25 of that to an equity injection, mm-hmm. right? And then 5 million will be deemed to be an acceptable loss. And this now, the owner can convert 55 million,
yeah.
55 million to an equity injection. And the 5 million stays there. But that can be over 3 years. So you could actually take another 30 million hit on top of that as well, right? Mm-hmm. Which is 10 million if they deem the club to be sustainable. So instead of 5 million becomes 10 million over 3 years, that's 30 on top of the 60 that he's thrown in an equity injection. And that's 100 million. That you're basically at 100 million there. So you can run at 100 million loss over 3 years and not get any, and not be outside this once the wage bill, yeah, once the wage bill to revenue is at 70% or less.
Yeah.
Dicko, so you can do whatever you want.
That's what I'm thinking. Dicko, how dangerous is this? And what I mean by that is that, you know, and look, in the Premier League, Man City and now Newcastle are the obvious ones where you go. That's just unlimited funds and whatever it might be. But there's other clubs out there that spend a shitload of money and they don't do it well. Everton being one. Right?
Yeah.
And I'm not bringing this point up just to bash Everton, but you've seen their finances over the last 3 years. They're appalling. And I think they're struggling. They're going to struggle in the transfer market this summer because of it, unless they can sell probably their two best, considered their best player and probably one of their best players from last season. The rumour is Spurs are looking at both Anthony Gordon and Richarlison, right?
Yeah.
But how dangerous is this? Because this isn't like, you know, a fella coming in and putting 100 million in and, oh, the club are 50 million down and he's pulled the fucking plug. This is billions of pounds. Like, don't get me wrong. I can see Man City's owners being there for a long, long time. And I can see Newcastle's owners being there for a long, long time. But just on the off chance that something comes in and something happens in the world where Saudi Arabia are frozen out or, you know, or wherever it might be. How dangerous is it? Because you could literally see a club having no hope of survival if one of these either decided to walk away or were forced to walk away.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you ask, you know, City fans and Newcastle fans, especially like Newcastle fans in, say, 5 years' time, when what they achieve like is absolutely probably going to be over and above anything they achieved in the previous 30 years. I mean, I'm sure they would be more than prepared to take that risk for the likely success that's going to come their way.
The risk of the club closing down.
Yeah, I honestly do. I think some fans are absolutely desperate for success in this day and age. Some fans are willing to kind of almost sell the soul to actually go and achieve something. Actually, you know, turn that mundane kind of, you know, finishing mid-table or skirting with relegation into potentially consistent success, qualifying for Champions Leagues year in, year out, challenging for trophies. I mean, like, why wouldn't you in some ways roll the dice, you know? And I think a fairly large section of those fan bases and other clubs who potentially further down the road could find themselves being the third club bought and running this way, you know, they'll take that gamble, they'll take that risk, because the rewards are absolutely immense. The rewards are experiences that you would never dreamed of achieving. I mean, you know, Newcastle would have settled, probably would, in the short term for, you know, an FA Cup, you know, trophies that we were mocked at winning this season, FA Cup, League Cup, you know. So these are transformative moments, and for some fans, I think they'd be prepared to take the risk. Now the flip side is you say about you know, teams potentially going to the wall, you know, assets being frozen, stuff like that. I mean, we've seen it with Chelsea, you know, the scenario that, you know, unfolded for them. You know, they're always for a lot of these clubs, there'll always be someone who comes along. Now, it might allow them to do what they've been doing under a certain regime, but ultimately, I think they're probably going to, even if it means a return to the previous kind of stature and the previous results and achievements on a season by season basis, I think someone would come along and take the reins of a City or a Newcastle or a Chelsea if things go pear-shaped.
Yeah, because Kevin Sullivan says the Chelsea sale proved how many buyers are out there willing to spend big to get into the Premier League. And I completely understand that. Like, Phil, you see about, you know, the Premier League is where it's at. You know, if you want to own a football club at the absolute pinnacle, the Premier League is where it's at because of the whole infrastructure around it, the logistics around it, and what it can earn. But can you see any more clubs being taken over in this style, to this size, I suppose? Because I don't know if I do.
Well, I posed this to you earlier on when I was talking about this. Like, I can't see... Sorry, not that I can't see, but I can see a logical exit for FSG now at this stage. Well, genuinely, right? And that's not doom mongering. I think they're looking at Liverpool, where they've put them, stadium redevelopment, that type of size, right? And I think if the opportunity for them to buy an American football club comes up, right? Mm-hmm. That's where you potentially see an exit. Because as much as we think football clubs are amazing and the biggest things in the world and all that type of stuff, right? For the opportunity for FSG to own an NFL club, which is potentially $4.5 to $5 billion in terms of the cost it would to own it, right? And sports that they're familiar with, but one that has a natural rebalancing within the game itself. There's no rebalancing in football. There's none. There's no leveling of the playing field. Like, they're looking at it saying, no matter how well we run this club, and no matter how well we do this, we need an empty pit to actually compete with the top clubs in this, purely because that's what is going to drive success in this wave or this generation of football. So for them, being able to step back into something that they're more comfortable with, more familiar with, and has a natural rebalancing of the playing field built into the sport, so is that no team becomes bigger than any other team, right? And that every team has a fair shot at this out between 5 to 10 years in terms of winning the ultimate prize. Seems logical. And I think in that event, that the potential opens up, then a potential sale of Liverpool becomes more likely, because they can probably get close to what they'd pay for the NFL club without having to put any of their own money in their own pockets to do it. They'd probably sell Liverpool for somewhere between maybe $1-1.5 billion if they're to put it onto the open market, well, despite everyone thinking that. I know you think, but I don't think it would.
Chelsea were sold for $4.25 billion.
Yeah, but they paid off $1.6 billion to Roman Abramovich. So if you take that out of it in terms of what was there, it's 2.6.
Yeah.
It's a London-based club. I know Liverpool, and we're all Liverpool fans, right? But it is a London-based club in terms of what it is. You've got a lot of real estate associated with the club that's there. There's a lot of things when you go to the valuation.
There, but Liverpool's worth more than Chelsea Football Club. But look, I suppose we could argue over the price all night, but the price is irrelevant, really. Yeah, but your point stands. You know, the sort of way that they could go and do that. Like, for me, I don't know if I can see. I say this, like, would the Premier League let more in? But why wouldn't they? They can't stop anyone coming in now. You know, because
I think you're running out of players, though. You're running out of players in terms of who has if right. So we've gone past.
I don't think you are, Phil, because like Ashley says, does this encourage up the more legitimate owners due to the lack of ability to compete? I think that's a great point. I think it does, because if you have a club, right, that say Everton, and they want to sell their club for 300 million or four, I don't know much Everton are worth, right, but just say for half a billion, right, just for argument's sake. What's the point in Everton bringing in a like for like in an owner, right? There's no point. They're not going to get any further. The only thing people can look at now is they need to get somewhere near where Newcastle and City are. That's what it's turning into, because... And even that, an owner would look and go, spend $500 million on everything to go in and put another $500 million in and be 12th in the Premier League, 10th in the Premier League. It's just, it's going to go to the point where I genuinely think you'll probably see 2-3 teams max having any impact on the Premier League for the next 10 years. And I really mean that.
But Gav, my point is more so in who could own a club, right? Where it used to be, like, you think to yourself, the richest people in the world. But it's not even the richest people in the world, it's the richest funds in the world. Look at this Saudi Arabian thing. This isn't just the sheik going in and buying the club, right? This is the state of Saudi Arabia essentially buying Newcastle United. And all the money that's in Saudi Arabia is open to put back Newcastle United to however much they want. Mm-hmm. That's the next step on from where we've been. Like, there's very few individuals who will be sufficiently wealthy to compete with nation states and rich nation states when it comes to that level of finance. And you're probably down to the likes of Jeff Bezos, your man that used to be in Microsoft. What's his name? Better with the glasses. Bill Gates, that's him, yeah. Bill Houser Gates. But like, you're down to very, very few people in reality to what it is. So my thinking here is that you are starting to run out of super wealthy, super rich countries that will have funds that they want to go in and invest into football clubs. So at some point, the break in this is probably down to the fact that you just don't have that wealth, that level of wealth to be available to invest in a vehicle or have the desire to invest as. It's basically a vanity. It's a vanity push to attract people to that country that owns these football clubs. Because think about Qatar bought PSG with the World Cup in its sights, right? That's what they wanted. The Abu Dhabi thing is purely a vanity project. It's to put, like, they're basically using it as a vehicle to sell everything Abu Dhabi. Etihad Airways, imaginary hotels, Etihad face cream, Etihad, whatever it is, right? It's Etihad Salas. There's all these things, being sports. You know, it's just, that's just there as the biggest advertisement campaign for Abu Dhabi, right? So who, this is where I'm going, how many of these are left?
I know. Mm-hmm. There's not many of them left. There isn't. You know, you're not buying, an American isn't coming in with billions and millions to go come to America. Like, it doesn't make sense, you know what I mean? If you like someone from Leeds, you know, I don't know, the Isle of Man buying it and going, listen, the Isle of Man's great, come on over, like, it doesn't work. But, Dicko, you hear so much online, and in the media and stuff about, you know, like, I don't agree with what's going on, but I'm quite comfortable with it. And people might think that's a bit weird because, look, when Chelsea were taken over in 2003, I think it was 2003. He was there a year, wasn't he, before he brings in Mourinho. Like, everyone kind of went, whoa, what the fuck is going on here? You know what I mean? Because it was kind of groundbreaking when it happened. You remember he was signing all these players and it was all going mental, right? And that happened. City, like Chelsea, I give Chelsea some grace in this because, and it's not because I'm most used to it because it's happened 20 years ago. I give the most grace because when you looked at Chelsea, they were, their league positions were getting better as the years were rolling up towards that. So they were improving. They win a Cup Winners' Cup, I think. They won league and FA Cups, right? And that was absolutely fine, right? Well, not absolutely fine, but you kind of went big investment, you know, that pushed them onto the next level. Man City were nothing. Like, let's be honest about it. They spent 3 or 4 years in the first and second division in England, right? Averaging, you know, Gates, okay, fine. But when you looked at league position, you were looking at 15th, 13th, 12th, all around that position. They go down, they come back up, they go back down again, they come back up. You know, and they're kind of hovering, even around 2005, 6, 7, I think they're around 8th, 9th, 10th in the league, right? And Newcastle are the same, where they haven't won anything, I don't know, fucking Affairs Cup in about 1957 or something, right? And that's why they're attractive, because they're all right name. They're not huge clubs, they're not. But they're an all right name where you go, come in there, get them a good price and move them on. And that's just what's happening. Like, there's no point in giving out about it. Like, I see Newcastle fans now online, they're like, we should go in for him, and we go in for him, and people are fucking fuming because we're doing this, and I'm kind of going, well, I'm not fuming, but, you know, it's a bit mad. It's a little bit mad the way this is being done, and it's, you know, it's just a run-on from the other one. Like, Man City to Newcastle is just the same thing. Two teams, yeah. I think they're quite big. They're mid-table at best, are Premier League sides. And they just get big investment and they move on. And I think there's loads of players in the market for that, Dico.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, right, if you take the whole kind of Man City and Newcastle comparison now, like, the big problem for Man City, and it'll never go away, really, is they're not even the biggest club in the city. You know what I mean? They will never eclipse Manchester United. It doesn't really matter what happens on the pitch over the next 10 years. They're not going to eclipse Manchester United. That's just the way it is. I wonder if there's, you know, in hindsight, would Abu Dhabi have preferred to maybe go for a Newcastle, because at least they are kind of a one team city, and I know they have some rivalry down the road in Sunderland, but ultimately, you know, they will have a captive audience. You know what I mean? They have got this underlying kind of history and passionate fan base that have kind of stuck with them through thick and thin. And, you know, they would regularly fill that stadium, you know, 50,000 or whatever, you know, even keeping up attendances at times when they were relegated. So, you know, you've got to think that, you know, in some ways, I think the Newcastle project has an opportunity to kind of, you know, outperform and sort of, you know, go past kind of what Manchester City did over the equivalent time frame. They've already kind of got the blueprint to be able to follow. I think they will probably bring success there quicker than, you know, Manchester City brought success. And the reality is now, when you look at the transfers and the players that they're linked with, you can absolutely hand on heart say for about 80 to 90% of them that they're only being linked now because of, you know, the owners and the financial backing and what they're going to be able to sell as a project, as, you know, what they potentially could win, obviously what the wages are going to be. And look, you know, if you've got, you know, Newcastle fans out there who kind of, you know, aren't self-aware enough to realise this, then more the fool them. But look, in terms of where that all this puts us, you know, coming back to Liverpool, Because ultimately that's all I care about is where do we fit in all of this and in this world as it evolves and the new financial fair play comes into being. You know, let's not kind of get too despondent about it. I mean, ultimately, if this division could have 4 or 5, you know, teams who can challenge, I think that's almost all the better for us, because this kind of persistent two-horse race, I don't think, is doing us any big favours. You know what I mean? We've finished on the wrong side of it too often for my liking. If we can have, you know, multiple teams challenging, I think, you know, and you know, maybe have four or five realistic challenges going all the way deep into the season, then you know, I think it actually has the ingredients to be as a competition a little bit more exciting, to be honest with you. Over the years, the worry as a Liverpool fan is these next few seasons are critical. You know, what we do in the transfer market, we've almost got to be perfect now, you know, because we are going to be you know, competing, I guess, more and more with the likes of Newcastle. You know, City are always there, although we don't ever seem to really get into direct competition with City on players, funnily enough. We may see it a little bit more with Newcastle in the coming years. So that's what we've just got to be wary of, you know?
Yeah, look, as I said, I don't really fume over it. We've seen it happen a couple of times, and this is Newcastle's turn to happen. Do you know the sort of way? And it's just the way it's gone. You know the way? And at the end of the day, the prime target is a club that's a decent size in Man City and Newcastle that are probably underperforming, which both are or were in City's case. You can get them on a good deal, and you can go in there and you can invest your money and you feel you get a comeback on it. Phil, is there an argument that it would actually make more sense for these investors to go in and look at an Arsenal or a Liverpool or a Manchester United or a Spurs, someone that's already up there? And or you're going to pay way more in buying the club, but it wouldn't take as much investment after that to improve to them to a level. Is there an argument that could be one that just, that's a bombshell that could hit football in the next couple of years?
I think, again, it comes down to what is the ultimate out here. Like, if you take PSG as being the best executed example of one of these clubs coming in and taking over, and for the reason I say that is going back to a couple of points that you've mentioned. They've gone to a big city. They've gone and dominated the league that they were in, but they failed at the Champions League level. That's the only thing they failed at since they've gone in and taken over PSG in terms of what's there. They have turned it into a global brand in terms of a fashion brand, right? So it's now become a well-known brand in itself due to the pushing that they've gotten out of the Air Jordan brand across America and stuff like that, and popping up on every celebrity's tops. And it's one of my greatest bugbears with the Nike deal that we have, is that's what I believed Nike were going to do with Liverpool's gear, particularly in the States with the link to LeBron James and stuff like that. And we just haven't seen, in my opinion, we just haven't seen enough of that given the type of deal we have with Nike. And it makes you wonder, should we have gone for that Air Jordan brand as opposed to the Nike brand, where you would have seen more of this sort of cultural celebrity connection that's there? And then if you look at the Saudi to the Newcastle, they're looking at saying, going back to what Ray said, yeah, it's a one team town. Like, you've got lots of teams around them. You've got Sunderland, you've got Bury, you've got thing, but Newcastle has one team. It's a big city with one team that's a traditional team, and that it's had a long-standing history in English football at the top level. They mightn't have won a trophy since they won the Texaco Cup in 1974, but they have, they have been in the mix. If you think the late 90s, they were in the mix. They became known in the mix in terms of what was there. So I look at it that way, that they are trying to replicate that because they're thinking, well, we don't have to go in. We don't need to worry about derbies and all that type of stuff. We'll just dominate the Northeast, and by that we will dominate with that team, and it allows us to simplify what we're going on. So what's left? Anyone that goes to buy a team in London, so you look at Chelsea, there wasn't a queue of these nation states queuing up to buy Chelsea, right? Now, I know there was difficulties around paying off Abramovich and stuff like that, but there wasn't. You've got Tottenham, you've got Arsenal, Who else have you got? You've got Fulham, you've got Chris, you've got too many teams. This brings it back to, you've got too many teams in there, right? So Dennis, United. Yeah, but I think the logical ones then is you've got United or Liverpool. I genuinely think the next two logically are United or Liverpool. We know that the Glazers don't want to get out of United because they get nice little dividends taken out of there and the club generates money and they don't
have to worry about it. The leverage they use on Manchester United to do other business deals is huge for them.
Yeah, exactly. And like, why would they? It works from a business model for them, from the owners. It works. The fans don't like it, but they're the fans who've been managed to.
And
they
own an NFL side. You know, you could make the argument that you, like the one you made about FSG, whereas, you know, if the Glazers were to get an offer of $4.5 billion for Manchester United, they could go, okay, we could buy, I don't know, fucking the Patriots, just for argument's sake, right? If that comes up, they could go and do that, and they might go, oh yeah, great, but they own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
They do, yeah.
So they own that already. There was talk going back a little while ago that they were trying to leverage Manchester United against it was an Indian Premier League cricket team. They wanted to do £1 billion deal on that and just got outbid on it. It didn't work. So the leverage they're actually using on Manchester United to do other business deals is huge for them. Again, they get the dividends, they're taking that money out, and that's where the whole Manchester United stuff comes from every 6 months. But
The one thing I will say, if you, and it goes back to my point that PSG is the best executed example of these nation state clubs taking over, is it still means nothing. Neymar's gone there and he's wasted his career. I'm straight with this, right? The guy, nobody will remember Neymar's career in 10 years' time, right? Nobody will remember Aguero's career in 10 years' time. Nobody will remember what Kevin De Bruyne did when he went to Manchester City. And I thought, like, and this is not just hyperbole or in terms of random statements. There's a thing about football where you get away from the money and you get away from all that type of stuff, right? It's still got it's so old. The game is so old. It's so well known. And the major clubs that have been around for 50 years are so well known, right? And this is where it differs from American sports, that winning a competition with an AC Milan, with a Liverpool, with a Real Madrid, with a Bayern Munich, with a Barcelona, with a Manchester United, right? From a player's point of view, will increase your earning potential so much more than winning one of those competitions with a PSG or a Manchester City or a Newcastle United. Even though Newcastle United probably has that added bit that they are a traditional club, but they're not a traditional European club. They're not a traditional powerhouse, right? So in my mind, right, you can pump, this is where the one flaw that still sits in this and the one bit they're going to struggle, we'll see what happens now with Haaland at City. But like, can you honestly say, hand on heart, in 20 years' time, you're going to be talking about, I don't know, who plays for City? This is what I'm saying to you. Who plays for City? Who plays for City, right? I know at the time when they were coming up, you worry about the players. But David Villa probably sticks out in my head in terms, did he play for City?
No,
he
didn't.
David Silva, right? Yeah. See, but this is my point. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think that's where Pep's getting annoyed, because Pep has seen that now. Pep has seen he's won 4 titles in 5 years and he's gone, nobody gives a shit. Why don't he give a shit? And he's kicking and screaming about it. But look,
Sterling will probably be best known for Liverpool. Mahrez will probably be best known for Leicester.
Yeah, but Sterling is City's second all-time goal scorer, which is fucking mental. But look, it's probably something where you come back and you could probably look at it again at the end of the summer when you see what deals City do or Newcastle do, or indeed Liverpool do, Chelsea, United, because then you just kind of see what sort of money they're coming in. Like someone said earlier, like, what's going on at Arsenal? They haven't had Champions League football in bleeding 6 years and they're still pumping 150 million in every summer. But they're in trouble
if you look at the new...
yeah, but they have an owner that has a huge amount of money as well. So it's one of those. Couple of things. People are asking when winners and losers starts. But we just thought we'd have a big chat around that. O'Shane McGlinchey earlier said, though, I wanted to bring this into you. Winners of the week, Mike Riley standing down as the head of the PGMOL during the upcoming season. Loser, Howard Webb for replacing him. Jesus Christ.
Something wrote a mad article about...
That's bad to watch, isn't it?
somebody wrote a mad article about how it's unfair the flack the fans give referees, and I can't remember, it could have been Jonathan Norcroft or Jonathan Wilson or somebody. I think it was in the Athletic, so it was probably Jonathan Norcroft. Anyway, for a fraction of a second, I started drifting back to 7 years ago, Phil, and got angry about that statement. And the reason why I got angry about the statement is people feel this way about refs because they're deeply incompetent. The standard of refereeing in the Champions League is a lot better than the standard refereeing in the Premier League. And we say this every time we're going through the season. I don't care who runs the PGMOL. If they can put competent referees on the pitch, that fucking doesn't make a difference to me. I don't care who runs it.
It's gone from like conspiracy with referees. Like, oh, he supports this. You know, before VAR was always, oh, Howard Webb fucking loves United and he gives them this and he gives them that. And now it's gone from conspiracy to incompetence. And people hate referees because not only, like, look, if those referees are refereeing every week and you go, oh, he got that wrong, but I can kind of see where he's, you kind of have a bit of leeway with them. But now with the VAR, 80 cameras in the ground, instant replays, they can go off and watch, they can sit down on the sideline and watch the match back if they want and make some decisions, and they still keep getting it wrong. It's absolutely unbelievable. But Howard Webb stepping in as the, I didn't know this, Howard Webb stepping in as the head of the PGMOL is just
I thought it was a joke when I seen it. And Dicko says, get ready for more greater Manchester-based referees with Webb.
How can we get more?
There's so many of them, isn't there? And
Owen Bourke is just waiting for Jeff Winter to take over as the head of VAR.
I mean, I think if United are in dire need of 3 points, Howard Webb will appoint himself to referee a game at Old Trafford. You just see him emerge.
It's absolutely unbelievable. Here's another one for you. Chris Brack threw this one in earlier. It says, it's about Frank Lampard, so he's a lot loved this. Loser of the week, Everton and their Frank Lampard defence for his 30 grand fine for his post-derby comments. Basically, it's all LFC's fault. I haven't seen this. Have either of you seen this? If anyone in the chat has seen it, let us know what was said.
At this time of the year, I don't care about. There's only one thing that's on my mind, sport wise, at the moment, Gav, and it's not football. The rest of the world, Klopp and everyone is on holidays, and the only thing people are tuning into at this stage and caring about are the World Games. I was watching the Climbing World Cup at the weekend and I couldn't stop watching it. It's fantastic, phenomenal sport in terms of what it is. But like the World Games, man, I've been catching up on the local news stories coming from, see how it's going on in Birmingham, Alabama. And there's some fascinating news stories that are coming out there. All the geese and the ducks have gone missing in Avondale Park where the archery is going to be going on. Either the smartest ducks and geese in the world or the Americans have made lots of animals disappear. It's the south, so they might have been out doing their own shooting practice with the guns that are legally owned over there. So there's like a whole flock of geese and everything in this park. In the
when is the World Game starting now? It mustn't be far off.
10 days.
Wow.
10 days.
So that means it starts on a Thursday. You just randomly start on a Thursday, which is fucking phenomenal work.
Not Friday or a Wednesday. Or
I mean, my thing is, the winners at the moment are the long-suffering, like, you know, partners of us, you know, avid football fans who don't have to be subjected to any of the football for a good few weeks. But
would you consider them losers, Dicko, because then they have to put up with you? You know what I mean? Because genuinely, my wife said to me the other day, when is the football back? And I goes, why? And she goes, because Jesus Christ, like, we get like some sort of good form out of you when the football's on. Like, you're just moping around the gap.
Do you know, actually, there's the biggest loser of the month. I'm going to put it down to the month. FIFA. This is World Cup. This is the World Cup slot, right? This is what we should be talking about, World Cup football. Yeah. We won't be talking about it at Christmas time. No. It'll just be noise in the background at Christmas time.
I genuinely, like, I haven't given that World Cup a second thought. I genuinely don't know what date, and I should know this because I run this podcast and I should know what we're doing in December and, you know, what we're going to do around the World Cup or whatever, or if we're going to do anything. But I genuinely don't know what day it starts, what day it ends, who's in it. And I'm a bit like you on this, Phil. Like, I do know who's in it, but I don't know who has what group. You know, the only one I know is, I think America might be in England's group because...
Yeah, America, England, Scotland.
Yeah, yeah. And
but that's like, not even a group. That's just making up random stuff. They're just there wasn't a draw. That was just like people saying that that's what's going on. Nobody knows. Nobody's even paying attention. Right? So they can say anyone is in anyone's group because nobody's paying any attention. Mm. And do you know what's going to happen? When the league breaks, we're going to be like this. Jesus Christ, this thing is so annoying. I'm not even, it's Christmas time. I don't want to be paying attention to something going on in Qatar. We're looking at sunshine when you have to deal with the piss and rain and the grey in Ireland. That would just make
Andros,
it.
More Everton stuff. One that did, and I'm trying to know because people are throwing them in here. There was one during the week where I think Everton were linked with 25 million mil for Harry Winks. And I was only talking about Harry Winks on a show last week saying, I think you reckon he will leave Spurs. He won't get a look in with Basuma signing there. But some fella put up a tweet and he goes, Harry Winks, major man. Tom Davis. And he goes, Harry Winks basically made Tom Davis look like a brilliant footballer when he played against Everton. And we're now going to go and sign for 25 million. This is fucking mental. Andros Townsend has melted off about Klopp, apparently, by basically saying he's got his own way because of the five subs.
Yeah.
But
you would have thought Andros Townsend would be happy to be five subs because he might get
a game. And not only that, I don't think Andros Townsend realises that you need 14 managers in any of those votes to vote for it in order for it to go through. Now, unless Klopp has
Andros Townsend doesn't exist. He's like a shit fucking championship manager regen of Andy Townsend. It's like, well, we'll use Townsend. What is an Andros Townsend? Doesn't exist. Right? You may as well be talking about Harry Winks. That's not real. Doesn't exist. No wonder you didn't sign.
John O'Trozen up here.
Baptiste.
John O'Trozen up here. He says, did anyone see that fella from Qatar? Said if anyone waves LGBT flags at the World Cup, they'd be put in jail for 7 to 11 years. He said they're going to their country. You should respect their religion. No, I haven't seen that, but it's going to be mad, this World Cup.
Yeah. Like,
genuinely, it's going to be fucking
can't be any
mad.
Madder than the Dallas Cowboys having a sniper in the stadium in case there's any trouble.
Ah, well, don't go there, Jesus Christ.
There might be some out in Qatar, you never know, when looking for these flags. I mean, you're right, the scheduling looks a bit mad as well. I think there's on some days there's four games like back to back. They like start at something like 11 o'clock in the morning our time and then run all the way through to the evening. It's like it's going to be oversaturation, and I think a lot of fans will take the opportunity to have a bit of a break and maybe only tune in.
Yeah, do you think so? Some people might be like that because, like, don't get me wrong, loads of football fans are there, love the, you know, playing on the 24th or 22nd, you get Boxing Day or Stevens' Day, whatever way you want to call it, and then you get one on the 29th, you get one on the 2nd, and then you have the FA Cup, and people love that, games banging away over Christmas, but that might be good for you out there going, oh, this might be a nice little time off now, you know, just to recharge the batteries and get ready for the run-in. It's a bit of a strange one, but look, I can't see any more winners or losers coming in. So before we finish up, we're bang on an hour. We try to get this done in an hour and 10, I think. So Phil, the World Games, 10 days to go.
This is
where loads of people will switch off, but don't. The War Games is amazeballs, right?
Why would you turn off?
As soon as we stop talking about Liverpool, people turn off. It's mental. But if you want to see people playing chess, stopping and having a boxing match for 3 minutes and then getting back to chess, this is where you need to be, right? Because that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. But Phil, you sent me a video earlier of... Now,
it's only on for 10 days as well. The great thing about the War Games is it's only on for 10 days. It happens really quickly, right? Yeah. There's not this, like, you know when the Olympics goes on for a year and you go, like, how is that still going on? Yeah. Are those horses still doing their thing where they go, like... Yeah.
So,
like, that's not an Olympic sport.
So the latest one,
only sports.
So the latest one is, right? Do you ever watch the Olympics where a couple of the ground events, as they call them, isn't it, in the athletics, so do you ever see the one where they have the big square and they do like flips and all across the diagonally across the square and they do a little dance and I don't know what's it called. I don't know what it's called. Anyway,
the floor.
I think it's the floor. Yeah, right. Yeah. So So they have that, right? And then if you ever look at the one where they run, and then they bounce on this kind of springy thing, hit the thing, and they flip up in the air and land, and they get points. So you've seen that in the Olympics.
This gets rid of the vault, gets rid of the floor, and makes them do... They make them
run really fast, do loads of flips in a straight line, but what have they called it, Phil?
Tumbling.
Tumbling. It's fucking outrageous.
It's fantastic.
It has to be a wind-up.
When I started watching Tumbling, I was thinking, what's Tumbling? Like, is it just like, you know, as a kid's where you get a hill? I thought, like, honestly, you know, and I actually think this would be a great sport.
I had visions of Bobby Firmino tumbling as much as he could. And depends how far you can get.
How far you can go, yeah. Like, or a running track where you just tumbled around the running track for as long as you could, like 400 metres. Who could go around the tumbling, right? But no, it's power tumbling, Gav. So that's what it is. So basically, it looks like somebody's done some type of weird computer
graphics thing. Sean Bourke wants to know, what's the World Games? Head to www.worldgames.org and all will be revealed. It's outrageous.
It's like literally, and then they go and they bounce, but like they're not tumbling, they're like flipping and twisting and thing, but it just keeps going and going and going and going and going, and then you have to land at the end. But the best bit is that because they've tumbled so much, every single one of them
are dizzy as fuck, aren't they?
They're dizzy.
So when they land, they look like they've had about 12 points, don't they? But the fact that you just call it tumbling is fucking outrageous, and I genuinely think this is a complete wind up. Look, I'm waiting for the countdown to come, right? And the website to just go, ha ha, you know, because this can't be real.
It's on CBS. If you have
is it CBS?
Because Kev O'Sullivan says, please tell me it's televised somewhere. CBS.
It's on live. It's on live, and you can also go onto the War Games website. Yeah. They have live coverage of the events as they go. There's canoe marathon. I can't imagine much is going to happen in canoe marathon, right? So
canoe marathon. What's that? Just really long canoeing
in Alabama.
Canoe race, you just get in the canoe. There's no like gates or anything, and they start paddling and they go on for ages.
And they just don't tell you where the finish line is. You just keep going until they tell you to stop. You end up somewhere in the sea.
You know when it says welcome, like I say welcome to Alabama, and then I'll say welcome to Louisiana.
Yeah, there's a fucking there's a boy off the coast of New York somewhere where you have to fucking get to, and then you might win. That is just unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable.
I was reading the news clips from Birmingham, Alabama today to see how excited they're all getting. So the flag, they took a flag. Now, I don't know if this happened on January 6th when Trump was there, right? But they took a flag from Washington, D.C. For the American team that's being brought all the way from Washington, D.C. to the opening ceremony of the War Games, and they're going to raise it there. So it's very exciting. It was in Mobile, Alabama yesterday. And they were leaving there. They wanted the crowds out to cheer along because it was some army veterans.
So instead of bringing the Olympic flame around the gaff, they're just walking around with a flag. Like it's I can't put my finger on it, but it's like it's just like a knocked off version of the Olympics, but in a really drastic way.
Sponsored by the Olympic committee to sponsor this. This isn't like just a group of lads
together. These boys, the real Olympics, are in it. Okay.
Of course they're in it. Like it's
tomorrow's Olympic champions, you know what I mean? I mean, do you know, guess how much a day pass is to go?
How much?
$35, what a bargain.
Oh, no, and can you bring your own gargle with you?
Oh, well, I'd say that needs to be left at the door, but you'd sneak a can or two in.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I think if it works right, Gav, we should contact them and see, can we show tug-of-war highlights? Because that's tug-of-war is one of the competitions, and I want to know, is there one country who just for a laugh go, and let the others go flying?
But CBS have it. They wouldn't let you do it. Like,
no, it's a serious broadcaster. But, I like Chris Golden's suggestion. I presume this isn't a sport, but 50 meter belly flop diving would be epic, wouldn't it?
It's just I just think it's amazing. Like, and I'm actually starting to come around to the idea of just sitting and sitting with somebody and watching a day of this and recording it.
I'm telling you, take the day off. We'll just do it.
It's unbelievable. Like, just sit with a load of cans, watch it. Because the names of some of the stuff, floorball, that's hockey, isn't it?
Floorball is hockey. Yeah, it's what we used to play in school. Is
chess boxing.
But fistball. Everyone's going to get into fistball. Fistball is fantastic. Or is it corfball? I can't remember which one it was now. But they're all balls.
It's absolutely unbelievable. But listen, go and check it out, www.worldgames.org, if you want to see all the events.
Life-saving. We have to cover the life-saving, Gav. It's still to this day. Right?
All right, go on. Life-saving, go on.
No, we've talked about it before, but I keep going back to the clips and it's still mental. Lads with fake dummies under their arm doing lengths of the pool, right?
Yeah. I remember that. That's basically like, you know where you got your Kiara? Yeah, the Kiara cert and skill. If you got one for just getting in the pool, you got a cert, but then the certs got harder. And like the hardest one was like jump in down into 6 foot of water and pick up a fella that has a brick attached to him, bring him back up and all. Mad stuff. We won't be doing
skydiving. Was one of them.
Carla Dunham says, watch along World Games on the day trip or something. No, it won't be happening on this channel, but you never know. We could record it and put it out somewhere. We don't know yet. I assume no one's bid for the European TV rights. Get on a feel. Says Red Steve, change his name again. G10 says, just Google the War Games. There's a video of lads throwing plates and saucers. Yeah, that's frisbee. They call that one. That's frisbee. That's their version of archery.
There's a beautiful Nike World Games dry fit training top.
Oh well.
Oh, well. I have to get them. Yeah. That has to be official gear. Do you know what, though? To be fair, they have canopy piloting. Canopy piloting is basically just a made-up name for parachute.
Tommy C says, worst winners and losers show ever. Why? We spoke about good things and bad things, and then we're ending on really good things. You know what? I think it was good, and it's the summer. This is what we do in the summer.
Laszlo Panifex, fistball, not in Qatar.
Ashley L says, it must be a quote from the website, 3,600 world-class athletes from over 100 countries will compete for gold in more than 30 of the fastest growing sports in the world. They're just sports that they've renamed. They haven't made these sports up. They've literally gone, hockey, floorball. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking amazing.
So instead of having ice,
archery,
you know, ice
target shooting, you know, they just
archery is a bit better because it's moving targets rather than just the stationary ones you get in the Olympics. So it's like a drive-by
jousting.
If they had that Russian, you know, that mad Russian fighting where they dress up in the armor.
Chris Golding says, lads, I am sure this is all based on an Australian comedy crowd. Look up the ads, or can I paste the address here? Chris Golding, if you want to email us, lfcdaytrippers@gmail.com, you are more than welcome to send us that, because I genuinely think this is all a wind-up.
I got involved on the website. It says get involved, and I actually emailed them at one stage and said, look, is this like to become a contestant, or is it just like I'm going to play in the archery? Is that what it is?
Where were the qualifiers for it?
You know the way, it can't be the Olympics, so they did something. So they do duathlon instead of triathlon, right? So duathlon is run, bike, run. So there's a fella, they were interviewing him, I saw his interview, and he was like, they go, yeah, I wasn't great at the swimming, so I much prefer this. It just means I only have to run. And the man says, well, what's your favourite bit? Is it like the running part or the cycling bit? And he goes, I think it's the running part because I like running.
It's absolutely fantastic gear, I have to say. This started as a laugh a couple of months ago when Phil was telling us about this, but like we've really got into it, and we're gonna 10 days to go. I'm genuinely gonna follow it now. You know, I'm gonna look up highlights YouTube. I'm sure Phil, if it's on CBS, I want
Kev O'Sullivan, if you're out there, I think you are in the chat. Listen, when you're doing the multi-sport show on a Friday, the War Games has to be headlining. What happened this week at the War Games? Only 10 days. It's not going to be, you don't get to do two shows.
Owen Bork says, this takes me back to the old days of the Trippers talking nonsense after the football chat. If people want winners and losers to be turned into a random football/random show on a Monday night, we'll absolutely do it for the summer. There's no issue there because there's nothing happening. You know what I mean? If we can come on and talk about the football and talk again about the War Games, there's no problem. And people, listen, I'm going to tell you, let me be straight with you. People watch this show if they want, and they don't if they don't want to watch it. And we can't make them like, subscribe, share, comment. We can't make them do fuck all. So if they don't want to, they don't. It's as simple as that. We're not out here for all that.
The World Games have got you know, a lot. They've got Qatar to thank for this because they are on the world stage. There's nothing else. Yeah. They're not competing with anything else.
There's no Olympics. No Olympics. There's no World Cup. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like today at the Games.
Could you reckon the World Games could turn up next December and just call it Cup Ball? And they have it in a really hot state in America. And, you know, instead of teams, they just have schools playing in it. And, you know, they genuinely could. They genuinely could. But look, Carol Dunneman likes the random chats. It's the summer. Like, do you want us to make up football stuff to talk about? Like, tomorrow night we're going to do a transfer show about all the transfers and all the names out there. That'll be grand. Wednesday we're doing a quiz, which I'll come back to in a minute. Thursday we bring on viewers to be in the viewer's voice. Friday the lads will do Sports Unplugged, all the different sports they want to talk about. And Sunday we'll be back for the Fat Back Four. And Sean will be back, which is great because people thought he'd retired yesterday. But a couple of things. come on, what are you laughing at now?
Was the one story I forgot to tell you about. Right, they have the speed skating track set up in, I swear to God, you have to see this.
It's not a real speed skate.
I don't know how to do this because I have it on screen here because I'd kept it from earlier on, right? But Gav, it's literally a car park. I can't, right? So basically, you know, ice skating, they're not on ice skates, they're on rollerblades, right? So you can't do ice skating because it's in Alabama in the sun. They have this blue track for the rollerbladers to go around, but it's like there's nothing. They've literally gone to a car park, right? I swear to God, they've gone to a car park.
Just painted the blue thing on the car park.
And just painted the blue thing down, and beside it, there's like an office block that you'd see in The Office, right? That's beside it, right? There's no stands, there's no nothing, and there's just a fence. If you can imagine, it's like
you
see
it. I'm telling you, get on it. You'll love the World Games, and it'll keep you going for 10 days, wherever it is, in 10 days' time. Failicon is on your screen. I told you last night we passed the 10K. You can still donate to that till the, I think it was the 10th of July, but we've extended it out because Phil is doing his thing now where he's going to, I think he's doing a triathlon, not a duathlon. But he's.
No, I'm doing an adventure race. It's a kayathlon.
Okay, so you're cycling?
I'm running, well, I'm mountain running, cycling, and then kayaking.
Okay, so it's a triathlon.
I'm doing my own World Games.
Right, so Phil is in the World Games Ireland. So if you want to donate to Phil, you can go into the Failicon link that's in the description and donate there to Phil. Phil is spreading that amongst all his friends, family, social media and stuff like that. We have got a quiz on Wednesday, but it's different. We are having nothing to do with it. It's all about viewers. Only viewers can win. It's an interactive one, which we're setting up tomorrow and Wednesday. You will need probably two devices to watch and play the quiz, okay? Because you will watch the show on a laptop. You will play the quiz on your phone via a link. The link will be put into our Telegram app on hopefully Wednesday morning. People can join up. And I think the thing we're using maybe allows us something like 50 or 100 people in. But we'll explain more as I get it sorted in the next couple of days. But as I said, it's going to be live. There will be two or three people on screen going through the questions. You will be doing it on your phone. If you take the link and go along, it will be Liverpool-based questions from the Premier League years. They're all multiple choice. Fastest finger force gets more points and all that sort of thing. There will be leaderboards after every round. It's going to be a bit of crack. We will have comments coming up. We'll put them on the screen, all that sort of thing. So check out our Telegram app. It's very easy to do it. If you go to the community tab in our YouTube page, you will be able to find out how to get on there. We will release it across social media, but the people in Telegram will get it first in order to go in. But as I said, if you're going to do it, if you're going to watch and play, use two devices, laptop for watching, phone for playing, or vice versa, whatever you want to do. So just to let you know that. But all the details will be put in our Telegram app on Wednesday morning. And once it's put in, you can actually join. You can join it there and then, and it'll keep you joined in until we start, all right? Yeah, that's about it. Phil, anything else before we go?
Auntie O'Chill wants to know, do you have to cycle with your kayak on your back? You actually have to cycle it with on your head, like a massive hat, right?
Yeah. Like an elongated sombrero.
Like if I was an admiral in Napoleon's navy.
This is actually a serious thing you're doing, isn't it? It's like you're not messing here. Like this is a serious thing you're doing. No, he's laughing here, but he's fucking bricking himself, I'd say. Dicko, anything else before we go?
Legs are in bits. I was up and down the mountain yesterday. I was on the bike and I was back up and down the mountain again. So it's like I'm just in a heap.
No, fuck that. Not for me. Dicko, anything else before we go?
No, won't be around the next couple of weeks. But then after that, we'll be very close to the...
Isn't it weird that you've taken the time off during the World Games?
Yeah, I get back from a holiday, so with 3 days to go. So I do have some opportunity to have
That's the big one. That's when the 110 meter hurdles comes in and it's just called jump fence. You know what I mean?
Jump fence. So, with your legs tied together.
You've timed that well. I can just see it coming back from Lanzarote, dropping the bags in the hall and telling the missus, listen, War Games, baby.
I'm going to try and get them to switch it on in the middle of the All Ireland semi final.
Yeah. The All Ireland semi final is on and Dicko's there going. You couldn't stick on CBS there, could you?
For the World Games.
Dicko in an Irish bar.
Fistball quarterfinals.
Dicko in an Irish bar and Lanzarote with the big screen on, chess boxing on, about 200 people around a 40-inch plasma trying to watch the All-Ireland semi. Absolutely brilliant. And I wouldn't put a boy Dicko either to ask that question, to be honest with you.
Just to annoy some people.
You got the World Games there.
I'll tell you where you will get the War Games over anywhere. The Beehive in Liverpool. That's where you get it. The Beehive would most definitely turn on the War Games, yeah. But anyway, that has been Winners and Losers. Well, it hasn't been. It's just been us being randomly chatting about football and the War Games, to be honest with you. Some liked it, some didn't. But listen, the chances are this is what it's going to be like between now and probably the end of July. So strap yourselves in. It's always a good laugh. Talk to you in a bit. Over now.
World Games.
Sports Social Podcast Network.